The retirement and IRA show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Well, welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show, EDU edition for this week. On this week's show, we've got a topic that was, inspired by an email that we've got from a podcast listener. It's going to be, I think it's more of a philosophical topic, if you will. We joke a lot of times, there's all kinds of numbers and rules related to retirement planning that we go over fairly regularly on the show, but there's what I would call financial planning a soft science or an art with scientific elements at times, but there's a lot of soft decisions, if you will, and I mean those that can't be done on a calculator or on a computer, that are very important parts of retirement planning, and I think that's the essence of the topic here, and Jim's going to share that with us. So, Jim, I'm assuming you're back from getting your bottle of water.
I am back. How are you?
Excellent. I'm doing well.
Excellent. And hi, folks. This is our last show before the Thanksgiving break, correct?
That's correct. So we'll be back right after the Thanksgiving week with the next show.
So, right.
So 2 week gap.
The week of Thanksgiving, y'all won't be getting a show, but enjoy turkey and football and whatever else it is you're going to do for that week. Chris, you're going to be on the beach somewhere, aren't you?
I'm hopefully going to be on the beach here shortly for a while. I'll be back for Turkey Day.
Okay. You'll be back before the big day.
Hopefully. Well, hopefully not, actually. Now that I think about that, I'd rather be on the beach for an extended period of time.
Yeah, I'm surprised you guys didn't stay through Thanksgiving and just come back later.
Well, we can't be gone for super extended periods of time. Unfortunately, we still have obligations here back home.
Six kids and
quite,
four dogs?
Quite retired, I mean, come on. Yet. I think it'll be okay. But we can't come back if we test positive for COVID, regardless of your vaccination status. So that's why I say, we could be extended without our direct intervention. We'll just be barred, and bummer, we'll have to stay on the beach for longer. But
was sick with
we'll
COVID
see.
In Mexico? No, I would rather be home than you.
I'm
don't want
to
get
vaccinated. I don't expect to get. I'm fully boosted up and everything, so I think I've done all the protection. Plus, the place we're going. Guess not that we turn this into a COVID show, but there's only 6% ICU utilization where we're going. Here in our county where we are right now, it's at 100%. So actually, there's a lot more room in ICU beds where we're going than there are here. So kind of a weird, not something I would have expected.
Okay, well, I'm not sure if you're hoping to get COVID.
No, I don't want to.
Be in a nice bed in Mexico and stay longer.
I want to be delayed through, for some reason, to spend more time on the beach. Let me just say that.
Yeah, you want to be delayed for other reasons than a life-threatening disease.
Maybe weather.
Okay. All right, well, anyways, you do enjoy yourself and everybody listening. I hope you all have a wonderful Turkey Day as well and enjoy yourselves. This question, when I read it, when we jump into the EDU show, because we don't opine, we just jump right into things on this show. We don't dilly-dally.
What?
Our show's not known for dilly-dallying.
Whatever.
When I read this question, I know a lot of people are going to be saying, how the heck are you going to do an EDU show on that question? Trust me, we can.
I hope so.
Because Chris is right. This is a non-financial part. It's to us something that has helped form the basis of our process that we call the Security Time and Income Process. It is a strong and adamant feeling of mine. And I'll share openly with people who've asked me about this question before. And when I explain it to them, a lot of them say, I never thought of retirement that way. I never thought of what you're doing. So what Chris and I want to do is kind of share with you some of the essence, not the financial essence, but some of the common sense essence of what retirement planning really is. So let me begin first with the question. And again, trust me, folks, we can turn this into an EDU show about retirement planning. Okay, so it begins. Hi, I think they are from, yeah, San Diego. They're San Diegoans, is that what they would be called?
That's close enough, yeah.
Or is it San Diegans?
That sounds a little more natural, but...
San Diegans? All right.
That sounds weird now that it comes out of your mouth, though.
What doesn't sound
those
weird
hailing from San Diego.
As it's coming out of my mouth. Okay, so that's one of my many faults, is I may sometimes mispronounce a word. Or what are they called? Euphemisms or metaphors? Or what are those things called that I'm always messing up?
I think it's beyond that. It's just kind of general sayings.
Sayings?
And,
okay.
And yeah, it's...
All right, whatever.
Yeah.
So it begins. I'm a new listener, and I'm curious about something that you may have addressed on a show in the past, but I haven't gotten to yet. And here's the question. Why is Jim considering the greater Cincinnati area for retirement? So that's a pretty straightforward,
that's
easy
the question?
Question. That's the question.
What?
We're going to do an EDU show on this. But they continue why they're asking us that question.
Okay.
I'm a Cincinnati native. I attended the University of Cincinnati, which I had never heard of, but apparently, now that I've been following the Cincinnati area, they got a pretty damn good football team.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mm-hmm. didn't realize that.
Yeah.
So anyways, I am a Cincinnati native and attended the University of Cincinnati for my undergraduate and graduate school. I then left in 1985 and joined the military. My husband and I are strongly considering retiring back to downtown Cincinnati from San Diego. Yes, folks, you heard that correctly. They're going to move to downtown Cincinnati from San Diego. I think it is a great mid-sized city with so much to offer. How is that going to relate to retirement, and why are we going to do an EDU show on that? Well, let me answer the first part of the question before I get too deep in this. And Chris, keep me brief on this so I don't go on crazy of
okay.
how I chose Cincinnati. Because that is not how it ties into retirement planning. Why I'm doing what I'm doing now after choosing Cincinnati is what Chris and I want to concentrate on. But as listener, as far as I found Cincinnati, honestly, it had nothing to do with what you alluded to. It is a great mid-sized city. It truly is. I've only been there 6 weeks so far of my life has been spent in Cincinnati over the past few months, and I do like it. It is a pretty nice mid-sized city. I did meet a retired pediatrician who is married to a neurosurgeon, Chris. They moved to Cincinnati 4 years ago from the New York / Connecticut area where they were raised. And the husband, the neurosurgeon, says he loves Cincinnati. He said it has everything New York has without all the problems. That might be stretching it a little, but not so much as the problems, but I don't think it has everything New York has. But here is a pediatrician and neurosurgeon liking Cincinnati. So it is, in my opinion, a really nice city. But listener, I didn't choose the Cincinnati area because of that. I chose it, quite honestly, folks, out of a frustration over gardening. And it's not funny. It is the
well, just again, it's one of those things where I know this to be true, and just to hear it said like that.
Here's someone admitting that?
Yeah, yeah. Well, my overriding retirement decision, it's my frustration
with gardening.
It happened last year during COVID, which also, Chris, was one of the driest years on record, although this fall is quickly becoming, it's the ninth really driest fall, right. But last year was one of the driest years ever, and I think this year might even beat it. On record in Colorado, not just Fort Collins. We had massive, massive fires last year. I'm grateful we don't have the fires this year. It was just horrendous last year. And out of frustration, because I do love to garden, as you all know, I just Googled best gardening soil, a best place to garden, something like that. I did not search for the first result, which was New Jersey, I believe.
The Garden State.
The Garden State, yeah.
That's probably why it came up, is they planned that.
You'd have to haul me there dead to move to New Jersey. But anyways, and for all you Jerseyites, sorry, but there's no way in heck I would ever move to New Jersey.
That's coming from someone who grew up in Massachusetts. So
true. I'd never move back there either.
He has an inherent aversion to. Weren't you trained not to like New Jersey being from Massachusetts?
True, because of the Jets, but it's also for the outrageous taxes. Yeah. But anyways, back to Cincinnati. What I ended up doing is through my search, I think it was on the second or third search page on the Google, Kentucky kept popping up as wonderful gardening soil. Then they started talking about the soil and the limestone in it and the Kentucky bluegrass and all of this. And I liked the most, it had what I'm looking for. I love all four seasons. I didn't want 7 months of winter, so it pretty much ruled out north. I didn't want 7 months of summer. It pretty much rules out the south. I'm done with the arid west, so it pretty much rules out anything west of the Mississippi. Maybe not quite as bad, but you start getting to Nebraska to the coast, the Pacific coast. It's just too hot and dry. I'm done with it. I just don't like it anymore. And that little narrow Midwest region kind of popped up. I liked the idea of Kentucky. I then bought a book on Daniel Boone and read an autobiography on Daniel Boone, and I thought I got to go visit there. Only problem is with the areas that I was looking in Kentucky, it's huge with bourbon, college basketball, and horses. I don't have a horse. I don't watch college basketball, and my throat hurts if I drink bourbon. I would not fit in. So as I kept staring at a map, folks, I kept seeing the city of Cincinnati. I started reminiscing about WKRP in Cincinnati. I'm not making any of this up. This is how I chose the area. I started thinking of Les Nessman, the newsman, who used to bang his chest to pretend he was in a helicopter. It just, I loved WKRP.
And when they threw the turkeys out of the helicopter, thinking they
frozen.
Could fly. Yeah.
Got it. Were they the frozen turkeys?
No,
they were the live turkeys.
These were live, and they assumed they could fly, and it turns out no.
They can't, right. I remember that. But anyways, I started thinking of WKRP, reminiscing, and I just thought this might be the area. Okay, that's how I chose the Cincinnati area. How does this tie into retirement?
I was going to say, is that the EDU show now?
No. Okay, now we can move on.
How to identify Cincinnati as your target retirement location?
No, okay, let's get to the deep stuff before we lose too many listeners.
Okay.
That, in a nutshell, is how I chose the area. It's what I've started to do that ties into retirement planning, folks. Not just for relocating. That's key here. These stories and advice Chris and I are going to share with you today is not just about relocating. It's how you need to look at your retirement, period. Even though Chris and I may feel old, and I admit it, I'm old. I'm 57 years old. That's old. In my book.
I'm younger.
I know you're younger, but not by much. But my dad, who's 87, tells me he wishes I was his age. I mean, the other way around. He wishes he was my age. It's all relative. I may feel old, but to an 87-year-old, I'm young. And that's key, folks. There is the younger Jim. Even though the current Jim feels old, he is young compared to the 77 and 87 and maybe 97-year-old Jim. And the younger Jim, who I affectionately call hiking Jim, because I also love to hike. Longtime listeners know that. Hiking, fishing, and hunting is why I moved to Colorado. I also love to hike, so we call him hiking Jim. Hiking Jim has an obligation to older Jim, who I affectionately call, longtime listeners will know, Gardening Jim. As I age, I'm not naive, folks. I won't be hunting, hiking, and fishing to the extent I do now. I hope to do it through my 60s, but as I get into my 70s, realistically speaking, especially from mid-70s on, late 70s, 80s, mid-80s, late 80s, I just won't be hiking, hunting, and fishing. Perhaps fishing, where I can sit in a boat or sit in a garden chair next to the shore, is still doable, but not to the extent that I fish now. Mm-hmm. So older Jim or gardening Jim says, what am I going to want to do? Well, I can garden. Right up to the day my grandfather died. He died at 83. About 7 months before he died is when he stopped gardening. And I won't get too deep into his story. But right up to the year he died, he kept gardening. It kept him busy. It kept him active. He didn't garden vegetables. He grew roses and tomatoes. That's it. It was a rose or a tomato. But I think my love of gardening came from him. And I can remember him as I was in my 10, 12, 13, 14, 15. He died when I was 17 or 18. And I remember watching him and seeing him out there gardening all the time. I know older Jim is going to enjoy that, or gardening Jim. So why is a 57-year-old younger hiking Jim taking time, taking his money, traveling back and forth to Cincinnati? What am I doing, Chris? Besides being crazy sometimes to some people. Seriously, as far as retirement planning, why am I doing this now?
Well, you're doing a lot of the legwork that the younger Jim can do to benefit the older Jim. So the hiking Jim is going through all the efforts of confirming that what on paper looks to be a viable location, that it actually is a place that you can see yourself retiring, and investigating all the pros and the cons and the different areas you might like and all that kind of stuff, which takes some effort. And, once you get to the point where you need to pull the trigger on doing it, you'll have already done all that hard work, all the effort and time that it really takes to identify something like that. This isn't something, it's not like you Googled it and then you decided that day, oh, that's where I'm going, no doubt. It was, oh, that's interesting. That looks like it could check most of the boxes, but let me go see for myself and make sure. And especially for a relocation effort, I highly encourage people to do some investigative work before they up and move, because that's, you're really kind of rolling the dice when you're making a decision like that after not many reasonable people would do that, obviously, on a Google search, but they might vacation out there or something and fall in love with it after being there for a week and think it's the greatest place ever, only to find out the longer-term reality is not as attractive. So, but you're doing that work right now, and I applaud you for that. I think that's, and if you do all the work and then still come to the conclusion that the Cincinnati area and the rural area there is your place, that's great. Just think of that. You've got one less thing to worry about planning for, deciding as you get older and have to pull the trigger on some of these decisions.
Exactly. What Chris is saying is exactly true. Now, this show isn't just about relocating. Right. We're going to use relocating to help explain our concept, our belief system, the structure that we set up. Essentially, what I am doing, listeners, retirement planning is nothing more than the younger you. And again, I may not feel young, but relative to someone in their 80s, I am. So whether you are in your late 50s like me, early 60s, mid 60s, even 70s, mm-hmm. you are young. There's always a younger you and an older you, folks. Retirement planning, especially you do-it-yourselfers who are in your mid 50s, late 50s, early 60s, mid 60s, the age where most people really start taking retirement planning serious. What is retirement planning? Retirement planning is the younger you putting in place a plan to help protect the older you and giving the older you, yes, the financial means that they are going to need to survive, but also the knowledge that they are going to need to manage the retirement. Chris is going to talk about this in the main way that we use this with minimum dignity floor in a second. What I'm trying to get you to understand is the person who is going to decide if they're going to move to the greater Cincinnati area, and for me, that's going to be a 30-minute circle around Cincinnati through Kentucky and into eastern Idaho. Not Idaho. Indiana, thank you. That'd be really far out if I'm going to go to eastern Idaho.
Kind of a weird circle.
Yeah, it's a crazy circle. That circle around Cincinnati, I don't know what part I'm going to live in. But what I'm getting at is the person who's going to make that decision is not the 57-year-old Jim. It's not hiking Jim. It's going to be the 65, 70-year-old gardening Jim. But he is going to need the information that the younger Jim is gathering. The decision will be made by the older me, folks. But the younger me has to make sure I have the financial means, I have the area knowledge, I still have the desire, and that the area still makes sense. And that's why I am taking time out, spending money now. I know I'm blessed in the sense I can work remotely now. The office really doesn't come to a grinding halt when I'm gone. Staff probably enjoys me not being here for a little while. But I continue to work. These are not full vacations. I go out there. I work. I do take a little more time off when I'm in Cincinnati. Obviously, I drove all that way out. But I still can do it. I know a lot of people can't. And the show isn't just about relocating folks. Follow the concept. Retirement planning is the younger you putting in place a plan to take care of the older you. Sometimes that plan isn't just financial. You have to make sure the older you has everything they're going to need, has the estate plan, maybe has a description. The younger you should be writing out a description, especially if you're a single person like myself, or if you're a married couple, but one of the part of the couple doesn't really get involved in this. One of you do, the other doesn't. The one that does, the younger you, needs to make sure you are leaving the older couple, if you die first, all the information, all the finances, all the documents they are going to need to understand what's going on. And if you're a single person like me, you best make sure you have documented either on your own or through an advisor you're working with, and that advisor should be asking these questions and documenting, why did you do the estate plan you do? Why do you have the asset allocation you do? Why have you broken up the portfolio the way you do? What is your tax planning and conversion strategy? What is your intent with an inheritance for your assets? Who's keeping track of all that, folks? Who's going to take care of the older you if you're a single person and you're now incapacitated mentally? What if my stroke last year that I had happens 20 years from now and doesn't end as well as it did for me? And I'm incapacitated or suffered some other type of cognitive decline. Who's going to know why the heck I did everything I did? Retirement planning isn't just crunching data. It's not just writing an Excel spreadsheet, all you engineer Vanguardians who listen to us, patting yourself on the back because you have one hell of a great Excel spreadsheet. Retirement planning is making sure the older you, whether that you is singular or plural as a couple, has all the knowledge, all the information that the younger you is doing. If you have a reserve held for the older you, what is that reserve for? How did you come up with that calculation? What is the intent of those dollars? And a reserve could be an aging reserve. It could be an emergency reserve. It could be a guaranteed inheritance. Why is this money sitting over there all these years? Well, gee, that's my guaranteed inheritance that I want to make sure goes this way or that way. Who's keeping track of that? These are the things that a sound retirement plan will have, and these are concepts that a good retirement planner should be reviewing with you, or retirement planning firm, and they best better be doing that. One of the best illustrations of this, Chris, is the minimum dignity floor. Take our listeners through that, and why we say income annuities, and all you do-it-yourselfers, you cringe when I say the word annuities, unless you've been listening to my podcast for a while. then you understand there could very well be a place for an annuity. But the decision to buy an annuity is not going to be made by the 58-year-old, 60, 63, 65-year-old do-it-yourselfer engineer Van Guardian who's listening to this show. It's going to be made by the 78, 80, 85-year-old you. But what is our concept around that, Chris? Because, Chris, in the last 4 years, how many single premium immediate annuities have we put clients in?
A handful at most.
Yeah, the handful is zero.
It is zero?
Yeah, the last one we sold was prior to that.
Oh.
But
I knew the number was going to be small. Didn't quite expect it to be that, but we talk about them pretty frequently.
Right. Are we negative annuity?
No, we're an annuity agnostic is how I would describe it.
And do we actually like single premium immediate annuities if we had to choose an annuity?
When an income need is identified, those are the most straightforward, clean way of generating more of what we call lifetime secure income.
And even though it's been 4 years since we actually put a person in a single premium immediate annuity, how many of our clients do we mention single premium immediate annuities to? And out of that number, about how many of them probably are going to need one at some point?
Well, now you're putting me on the spot, but I don't have the numbers in front of me.
I'll answer the first part. You can answer the second part. 100% of our clients we speak to about annuities. 100%.
Even if it's to say we don't see likely need for one.
Right. But a lot of people do need them.
May need them.
May need them.
May need them, because we're talking about the future, and we always admit that we're trying to tell the future when we're doing any kind of retirement planning. There's no way we're going to nail it perfectly, but the essence of our approach is to establish this foundation below which you cannot drop. We refer to it as your minimum dignity floor, where the expenses in the form of food, and let me expand on that. I always do when I talk to people, is that by food, we started calling it food and it's just kind of stuck there. But what it really is everything you might buy at the grocery store. So for people who are keeping track on their list of, you know, oh, the minimum dignity floor, they didn't mention toiletries and paper goods and things like that. Well, that all comes generally from a grocery type store. So we call it food, utilities, transportation, housing, and healthcare, where food is a little broader than it may sound. But those five categories, food, utilities, transportation, housing, and healthcare, we believe that the expenses related to those categories need to be covered until the last day you're here on earth, because guess what? They're going to be around with you. Everyone's going to be exposed to those five categories expenses to varying degrees all throughout their retirement, all the way to the very last days, whether you have assets or not. And that's the key. If you're relying simply on assets to fund minimum dignity floor expenses, there's always the fear, and this is the number one fear people utter when you ask them, what are you most afraid of in retirement? Their answer almost always is, running out of money too early, right? Well, if you run out of money and you're relying on that money to fund the minimum dignity floor, you're in a very desperate situation at that point. So we want people to start their retirement planning process with securing or protecting that minimum dignity floor so that there is no way, no matter how long you live, that you'll drop below that standard of living, being able to cover food, utilities, transportation, housing, and healthcare. So as part of that exercise, we gather what you're paying for that. We use information about what typical retirees face in those areas moving forward, because of course some of those expenses are going to change a bit over time. But we find that people that have a certain budget for food, they tend to have that same kind of eating behavior. So a lot of what you do now will predict how you're going to behave in these five category areas of expenses as you move through retirement. But there's some things that will change as you transition onto Medicare and things like that. So we do, you know, our best at predicting what we believe your minimum dignity floor might look like moving forward. Again, telling the future, so there's no way we will have nailed it, but we've got a general idea of what it might look like. We then, this is the critical part, then we compare that to your current sources of secure income. Secure income has a very important characteristic that's like these minimum dignity floor expenses. These minimum dignity floor expenses are going to go forever till the very last day you're here on earth. secure income has one very clear characteristic that makes it, in our eyes, a very good match for covering these expenses. Secure income also goes to the very last day you're here on earth, whether you have assets or not.
And that's key when we came up with this concept. Since minimum dignity floor continues forever, it should be covered with income that continues forever. And I know what you all are thinking. There's no way in hell, Jim, I'm going to buy an annuity. And I don't blame it. But you don't need to buy an annuity now. In your, that's why I asked Chris those questions. We do counsel with nearly all our clients about an annuity. The reason I say 100%, Chris, is because Social Security is an annuity. A pension is an annuity. And a single premium immediate annuity obviously is an annuity. It's just that one is offered by an insurance company, one is offered by a corporation and backed by the federal government, and the other is only offered by the federal government. But all three are annuities, because an annuity at its core is just a lifetime guaranteed stream of income. Mm-hmm. We call it secure income. To us, dividends, safe, quote unquote, safe withdrawal rates, interest, royalties, they're all rent, they're all income, but they're not secure income. Secure income to us, and this is a definition I came up with, it's not in any textbook. Chris agreed with it, and we said, okay, this is what's going to form the basis of what we call secure income. First, it's predetermined and known. There's no ambiguity. We can reasonably project what you're going to get in day one of retirement and what your last check in the year you died probably was. Is it totally accurate? No, but it is predetermined and known. Number two, if secure income moves at all, it can only move higher. It's like a ratchet. It only goes in one direction. It can't go back on itself. And number three, it's not backed by your assets personally. You are not taking all the risk. It benefits from risk pooling. And the assets are backed by deep-pocketed third parties. The federal government, corporations, backed also by the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, which is the federal government, and an insurance company. So when we see clients who have non-secure income, we don't not use it. Chris adjusts for that absolutely, but he warns them, you could lose this, and if it is lost, you may need to purchase an annuity, and here's about how much you might need, so do be aware of that. We don't ignore it. It's income, and we're going to use it to cover minimum dignity floor, but we're going to give a warning, and I'll let Chris explain more about that. What I'm trying to get you to understand, listeners, how is what Chris is describing with secure income and minimum dignity floor the same as what I'm doing, what hiking Jim is doing for gardening Jim, what younger Jim is doing for older Jim? How is that the same? Easy. The younger you needs to make a determination if the older you is going to have enough lifetime guaranteed secure income. That's your responsibility. And if there's not going to be enough, if you're working with us, Chris, who does all these plans, we'll review with you where we think the shortage is going to be, how much the shortage is going to be, and what the older you would likely need to buy an annuity. And he'll tell you what you should put aside today. But Chris, whose decision is it to buy the annuity?
We like to have people wait until the need actually is kind of confirmed. There's a few things going on here. Remember, we're telling the future. Oftentimes, we're doing a plan for someone in their late 50s, early 60s, mid 60s. And maybe through our analysis, it looks like their secure income that they have currently, you know, almost everyone has Social Security. If they don't have Social Security, they nearly always have a pension. And then some people have some of both. But they'll have generally some type of secure income to begin with. And maybe that's okay for a while, but most of the time secure income doesn't keep up with the inflationary pressures that we anticipate or predict that the minimum dignity floor expenses are going to have, particularly healthcare expenses. So it's pretty common for in our projections to see a shortage start to show up unless someone has lots of secure income, and there are those folks out there, particularly those with a nice big pension and Social Security. They very often don't need to even consider any kind of additional secure income because they've got a ton of it to begin with. But for most people, they'll have a Social Security. If it's a couple, they'll both have some Social Security, even if one is just a spousal benefit. And that might keep their minimum dignity floor covered for a while. But then there's this gap that shows up. But this gap, but remember, it's just in the projections. And these projections might be predicting a gap out there 15, 20 years from now. There's no way I am going to be so reliant on our assumptions and our predictions of the future as to say, oh, in 15 years from now, you are going to need this, and it's going to be exactly this amount that you need. That would be crazy to rely on it to that extent. So all we're saying is, based on the best available information and the reasonable assumptions we believe we're using here, it looks like there might be a need for additional secure income here in 15 years or so. So all we want to do is make sure that if that time comes and you still need that secure income at that time, the financial resources will be there. In other words, the younger, the hiking gym in this example, hasn't spent it in the go-go period on fun to then turn around later on and realize, uh-oh, I got a little too carried away. And now I don't have the resources that I need to protect gardening Jim and his minimum dignity floor. So the hiking gym needs to put in place a reasonable amount off to the side. We call it reserving it or setting it aside, a reasonable amount. The big question is, how do we arrive at that reasonable amount? Well, since the most natural place to go get more secure income is what Jim mentioned, a single premium immediate annuity. There's other options out there too that are sometimes worthy of consideration, but this is the most straightforward way we can estimate this. We'll take a look at roughly what the shortage appears to be down the road and actually pull quotes. Even though we hardly ever sell a SPIA right now because most of our clients are in this earlier phase, we get quotes all the time. I pull quotes every single week for people. Why? Because I'm pulling a quote for their, you know, 78, 80 year old selves down the road. Not that an insurance company is going to tell me what this annuity will cost in 15 or 20 years, but we know how old you will be if you're still alive at that point. And we can figure out based on today's market, what an insurance company would charge for additional secure income. To fill in that gap that maybe we're seeing. So now we've got a number, a target, and saying, you know, it'd be a good idea for the 75 or 80-year-old you to have this amount on hand, ready to go. And if it makes sense, then deploy it maybe into an annuity or a series of staggered or laddered annuities, or maybe longevity is no longer an issue at that point, or maybe the minimum dignity floor didn't grow as much as we thought. You get to wait and figure out exactly how life plays out. The only thing you've promised as the hiking gym is you're not going to spend this money that's set off to the side because it's for such an important purpose. Identifying that then removes it from the rest of your budgeting, and now you're getting to the essence of our approach, which is to identify what's available for other spending once you've protected the minimum dignity floor. Once you take that fear off the table, it makes it a lot easier to concentrate on the rest and divvy up the rest of the pie, as Jim likes to describe it. But that's essentially why we use annuity quotes now, is to estimate that, you know, what resources from your other savings might be needed to fill in this gap eventually. And we then, through some basic calculations, figure out what the younger hiking Jim, in this example, would need to set aside when he's maybe 65 in order to protect the 78 or 80-year-old gardening Jim.
Right. And the concept there again, folks, and how it ties into me relocating to Cincinnati and why I'm doing what I'm doing now, the decision to move to Cincinnati will be made by the older Jim, the gardening Jim. I suspect he will be around 65 to 70 when that decision is made. I'm not making the decision now. If I was going to make the decision now, I don't think I would move. I still enjoy hiking in the mountains of Colorado and elk hunting. But the decision to move is going to be made by the older me. I'm giving the older me the knowledge he is going to need to make an informed decision. Retirement planning in every aspect is the same thing. And that's why we hopped a little on the minimum dignity floor and our approach, but it's no different than what I'm doing with Cincinnati gardening and moving. We are going to do a determination for our clients, is what Chris is saying. We're going to tell the younger them what they need to do and why they need to do it. The decision to buy an annuity, though, is going to be made by the older you. You have to make sure you have given the older you the resources, the knowledge, and the understanding of what they may have to decide in the future. You're not just going to stick it to the older you. You're not going to stick it to the 78, 80, 83-year-old. Most people who have a shortage later in life, it happens between 78 and 83. This is just what we see in our office. It's anecdotal. We didn't do a scientific study. It's just we notice 78 to 83 is usually where the shortage begins to appear. Now, that still has to be monitored throughout your retirement, throughout your 50s and 60s and 70s to make sure that's still accurate. It's not a do it in 2021 and forget about it for 15 years, 20 years. But it is your responsibility, folks, to make sure the older you has the knowledge of why they might need to consider annuity, have an understanding of what an annuity is so they make a clear decision, and give them the financial resources to make that decision. But the decision is not going to be made until you're at that point. And then you're going to look at life expectancy. You're going to look at needs. You're going to look at other things that happened to you in your retirement that you never fathomed. Did you get a massive inheritance? Did a family member need some financial support where now your income is even lower than you thought and you need to definitely consider this? Are there other products that are created that we can't even envision right now, or government benefits that we can't even envision that could replace the annuity and give you the income you need? These are the things and the decisions that will be taken into account when you need it. And it's why we don't believe in buying an annuity now. We don't recommend most people buy an annuity now. I say most. There are times where we will alter that, which we won't get into. They're more personal at the client level. But that's retirement at its core. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing with estate planning. You need to be doing that now, but the decisions to do certain things will be made by the older you. Or maybe even not the decisions, but the understanding. You need to be documenting, folks, all of the decisions you make with your estate plan. Why? The older you might not remember why you did it. Or the beneficiaries, or the agents under a power of attorney stepping in to help you, or the spouse who never took any interest in any of this is now being forced to figure out, why did my husband or wife, who did all this but sadly died unexpectedly, do everything? And now they're trying to figure this all out. That's why you should be documenting all this. The older you has to help. Excuse me, the younger you has to help the older you.
And I'd say you, a lot of do-it-yourselfers who are going to try to continue doing it themselves, extra important to have this all documented for both yourself. Think of it as making notes for yourself so you don't have to try to figure this out in 15 years when you come around to thinking about it again. I've done that a lot. I write all kinds of things now that when I was in my 20s, I didn't write anything down. I didn't forget a thing. It just 5 years later, oh yeah, I did this, this, and this, and this was this, you know, it was all right there. In my 50s, that's already started to not be that great. Well, you can overcome that through planning, right? You write it down. So I write all kinds of stuff to myself down to remind myself why I did certain things for yourself and then for a spouse. Very, very important, because they may not have been intimately involved in this whole process. It's rare that two spouses are equally engaged with this whole process. It is nice when it does happen, but still, the other option, if you're not doing totally doing it yourself, there are you know, advisors that take it seriously enough, or planners, that professional planners that take this serious enough that they put it together and they put volumes of notes on everything and they have a clear understanding of why all this is put together the way it is. Vast majority of asset manager onlys don't really do this. They have all the details about, you know, your portfolio and its allocation and, you know, historical performance and all this kind of stuff, and the annual discussions they had about your risk tolerance. There will be plenty of notes on all that kind of stuff. But why you put all the other pieces in place may not be there with every advisor. So the only way you know if they're putting this all together is if they're asking you questions about all of this and getting your detailed feedback about how you envision things happening, how you want this to happen, how do you want that to interact, how do you want to manage this, is this important to you, or is this not so important to you, that sort of thing.
You would be amazed if you saw the notes that we take when we work with people in our process. And again, we're not touting ourselves. We, as you know, we've paused. We're not taking on new clients right now. We're paused most likely through 2022. We're revamping our practice to emerge. I call it the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. It's going to be even better, in my humble opinion, than what we even do now. So Chris and I decided we're going to pause to concentrate on that. But you would be amazed if you saw, and if you're working with an advisor, make sure they're doing things like this. The notes that we take, the detailed notes outlining every facet of the decisions being made. We even record the conversations with the client about this. We share the recording with them and we maintain one. And we do it all the time, every year. Why? What better to do when you're 84 and you can't remember why the heck you did something than hear the 65-year-old explaining why you're doing it?
Right.
Yep. So we record them. These are the things that you should be doing. Record them if you're a do-it-yourselfer. Explain to your spouse why the heck you did what you did. Record it. Put it out there. Hopefully you're starting to get an idea of what retirement planning truly is and what it isn't. Again, for all you investment advisors out there listening and financial planners, retirement planning is not simply pumping numbers into eMoney or Money Guide Pro. I'm sorry, it's not. And pushing out some stupid Monte Carlo projection probability statistic and then limiting your clients to a quote-unquote safe withdrawal rate that is neither safe or even probably a reasonable withdrawal rate. Life is far, far, far too volatile and uncertain and unknown to say that's all retirement planning is. And all you do-it-yourselfers who are trying to emulate that, writing an Excel spreadsheet and looking at taxes and RMDs and distributions and expenses, that's not retirement planning. That's data crunching.
Mm-hmm. It's helpful as part of the process.
It's
critical because if you haven't done it already, someone is going to have to do it to get a very good picture of what's going on. But then a ton of decisions need to be made where your heart is involved, your emotions are involved, your brain, not the calculation brain, but the trade-off part, you know, because there's not just one path to this thing that's a successful and enjoyable retirement. There's lots of paths. There's a lot of decisions going to have to be made to find out what your final path might be. And it isn't just regurgitated from a piece of software, from a spreadsheet. There's all this stuff that needs to fit together and has to be understood over time. And that's a critical aspect and a reason why we try to do things as simple as possible. Only introduce complexity when it's absolutely warranted and will generate superior results. If a simple path will get you there, that's preferable because of the worry that you won't understand things or be able to pull off a complicated plan as you age, even with an advisor. I hate super complicated plans, even if you're going to walk through retirement with an advisor, because one thing that happens a lot of times, the advisor is as old as you or older, so they're going to be retiring, handed off to somebody. So maybe you trusted your initial advisor like your own sibling, or more, maybe, but you aren't necessarily going to have that person throughout. And if you've got a super complicated plan, that just makes it that more interesting that either a mistake is going to be made or you're not going to understand things and agree to something that you otherwise wouldn't have. and makes you susceptible to one of the other big fears. I mentioned running out of money. The next thing that's on the list, I'm afraid someone's going to take advantage of me. I'm afraid someone's going to take my money. I'm afraid I'm going to be, you know, defrauded out of something. Well, the simpler and more understandable it is, and with all these notes and a clear understanding of what's going on, lessens that to a great degree.
Absolutely. So retirement planning isn't that data crunching you do-it-yourselfers are doing or you investment advisors or financial planners are doing. It's crucial. But what you do with the data, that's what matters. And how you understand the data just gives you clarity to make an informed decision. All these decisions need to be made. Yes, they need to be documented. They need to be reviewed. Because ultimately, it's going to be the older you who's going to make a lot of these decisions, not the younger you. So people who today, and I'm not trying to turn this into an annuity discussion, it just fits today, but people who today knee-jerk, react, say, never, this annuity is stupid. You're robbing the older you. Maybe they're totally stupid. I do own an annuity. I was going to say, I don't own an annuity. I do own an annuity. And I've shared that. I have an income annuity. Why? I don't have a very big Social Security benefit. Y'all know that. All the years I was a police officer, I didn't pay into Social Security. I was a self-employed landscaper, didn't pay a lot in. Self-employed business owner when I first moved to Colorado, didn't pay a lot in. So I got a low Social Security benefit, so I did buy an income annuity inside my Roth IRA. So I don't want to say I don't have one because I've fully disclosed in the past I have one. But if I need one again in the future, it's going to be the older me that's going to make that decision, not the younger me. But that relates to everything, not just annuities. Please get that out of your head that this is not an annuity discussion. It's the concept of what we mean. The decision may not make sense to you, or you may not like it today as a 58-year-old. But the 88-year-old you might make the decision. Give the older you the knowledge they're going to need. And understand, data crunching and a probability Monte Carlo statistic is not retirement planning. What you do with all that data and how you integrate it to a minimum dignity floor, to the delay period shortage, the post-delay period shortage, how it ties into withdrawal planning in retirement. Are you going to take money out in any given year from an always taxable, maybe taxable or never taxable account? Should you be converting into Roth IRAs? Will required minimum distributions be an issue? Tax planning, how should you do it? Are you planning for two of you, one of you, or none of you? That 210 concept I talk about that I create, I don't want to say I create, well, I did. It was my thought process of tax planning should be about 210. Are we trying to reduce taxes for the couple you? Are we worried about the widow-widower you and the widow-widower tax penalty? Or are you trying to optimize an inheritance to none of you, your children, your beneficiaries, or your grandchildren? Then we have to look at their situation, their needs. Are they going to need a trust or not? And if there's a trust, what are we going to do about all the assets in an IRA that are horrendous to leave to a trust because of the tax issues? These are everything that ties in, folks. And then where's Medicare going to fit in? Where's estate planning going to fit in? And estate planning isn't just about estate taxes. Most people won't be subject to those, at least right now. But estate planning can tie into other tax issues. Step up in bases, which could be good. Bad tax treatments. If you have all of your money in IRAs, you might not be subject to estate tax, but your beneficiaries might lose half of it to income taxes. These are all concepts that change. They are not static. They need to be evaluated every year. They need to be incorporated into all that data in your do-it-yourselfer spreadsheet or your money guide or e-money program. That data needs to be updated, but the data is not the retirement plan. The retirement plan is how all that data interacts with your personal situation. And then it's documenting it, folks. All you do-it-yourselfers, record yourself explaining what the heck it is you're doing, or write it all out, or both. Planners, take exceptionally good notes. This is what retirement planning is, and then how do all these integrate every single year for the rest of your life. Those of you who think retirement planning is easy, you're fools. It's not. Why do you think we concentrate on just retirement planning? You know what's easy? What truly is easy? And where you probably don't need an investment advisor? And please don't give me bad reviews on iTunes because I said that, investment advisors. You do it yourself as a figured out something most people haven't figured out. Low cost, passive investments, well diversified, and occasionally rebalanced blows by anything else you could be doing as far as return potential and simplicity. And by not paying a lot in investment advisory fees, you get more money compounding for you. That's the easy part. Saving is easy. Why? You're not spending. All cash flows are positive going in. That's a wonderful thing. And market drops are buying opportunities, especially when retirement is still 40, 30, or 20 years, or even 10 years into the future. However, you get within the red zone, you get within that 20-yard line, you get within the 10-yard line, in our case, 10 years from retirement or less, it becomes difficult. If you watch football, you know teams can move that first 80 yards of the field and they come to a grinding halt in the red zone. Why? It's harder trying to punch it in. Yep. Retirement is that red zone. If it was easy, football would be 63 to 78. I mean, it would just be crazy if it was that easy. It would be like the New England Patriots in 2005 or 7. Where it was real easy for us to score. If it was that easy, we'd be doing it forever. And Tom Brady, that traitor, would have never left the Tampa Bay. Damn him. Okay, so I'm still a little bitter.
Yeah, you think.
But what I'm getting at, folks, is retirement planning is truly difficult. It is not static. It is ongoing. And it is not data crunching. It's the knowledge of what to do with that data. Why do you think we have three CFPs, well, two and one almost CFP, and one really good CPA working here? It's because of our decades and decades and decades of combined experience that allow us to look at the data, interpret what it's saying, communicate it with clients, document it, review it, record it, and monitor it throughout our clients' retirement. So they can sit back and say, oh my God, yeah, you guys do it. What a huge convenience. I want to enjoy retirement. You have to give, the younger you has to give the older you the information. And that listener from San Diego who's thinking of moving back to Cincinnati is why I, at 57 and loving hiking and hunting and fishing in Colorado, is spending time, spending money, doing effort to learn about an area. I have to make sure the older me, gardening me, has all the information he is going to need and the money and the knowledge and the finances to do this. And that's why I'm doing it. And that's how it ties into retirement planning.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's it in a nutshell, a 58-minute nutshell.
Well, then one thing, since my extra 2 minutes,
okay,
because I was going to talk
about
this article.
Yeah, you say that. You better not make this another 20.
No, I'd love to talk about the article. Okay. I won't. All of you who subscribe to the New York Times, well, no. If you subscribe to the New York Times,
you're not going to get this.
You're not going to get this. You got to subscribe to the Wall Street Journal. Okay. If you subscribe to the Wall Street Journal, look for an article that came out November 13th. That's just a couple of, what is it today? The 14th, 15th?
16th today.
16th, all right, three days ago. Yeah. Phenomenal article. I'll give you the name of the article so you can Google it if you're not a subscriber. Mm-hmm. If you are a subscriber, do a search for it. Read this article, folks. Retirees spend a lot of time and money to buy their forever home. Then they sell it. And it is in the Journal Report. It's not in the Wall Street Journal proper paper. It's in the Journal Report under Wealth Management. You can search, if you have the subscription and you do it electronically, by the reporter. The reporter's name is Beth DeCarbo, DeCarbo. They talk about three or four people who bought their forever home two, three, four times before they had their forever home in retirement. Mm-hmm. Every single person, Chris, did not do what I'm doing. Every single person got to retirement and then said, I'm going to move here. Yeah. They did not give the older them who was making the decision the knowledge and understanding of the areas they were moving to. One person thought they were going to move to Oregon and got there, bought a house on the coast, and no one ever told them it gets windy and cold in Oregon along the coast.
Yeah, I call that relocation regret.
We need to reduce that.
Yeah.
And it cost them a boatload of money. Another couple lost $120,000 when they bought their first forever home and had to sell it for their second forever home. Because all these things that were wrong with the areas that they never thought of beforehand. Mm-hmm. One couple on their second forever home in a place that I was thinking of moving, where it was Asheville, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. That was their second forever home after buying their forever home in North Carolina and then realizing they built it more than 30 minutes from a city and they loved the theater. And they didn't like the driving, and they liked fine restaurants. I said, what the hell did you build a house 30 minutes in the middle of nowhere for? But hey, it was their forever home, not mine. They clearly didn't have the information they needed. And then they moved to Asheville, North Carolina. And when they got there, they realized the neighborhood and the social life they didn't fit in with. It clashed. I don't know if it was politics or something else. And they just felt they were not welcome there, and they wanted to move out. Perhaps if they spent some time there, hint, hint, like I'm doing, they'd figure out if that made sense.
And I think not everybody can do what Jim's doing. I think what Jim's doing is a great idea. What I recommend people do whenever I hear through conversations that people are talking about a big relocation to a completely different area, I make sure they've spent extensive amounts of time there at different times of the year. And they live not just in a hotel or a resort, but they actually live in the community in some type of home environment that they would be similar to what they would live in if they moved there. And if they haven't had time to do any of this kind of initial work pre-retirement, don't buy right away. Rent for a while. It's okay. I know maybe you haven't rented since you were 18, 19, 20 years old. And it's just like, oh, renting, that's
Chris, you realize the next most hated word to a do-it-yourselfer next to annuity
paying rent
is rent. So just keep that in mind. Okay. We're not going to win any do-it-yourselfer fans
but it's a way to test the waters.
You own rent for
6 months or a year, you know, extended period of time. So you know what you're getting into. You'll be in a great position to then research the area. You're local there for a long time. You can look at the different neighborhoods. Driving by isn't going to tell you the whole story. You've got to live in it. You visit it, you get to know people, they give you ideas about where's attractive places given the activities you like to do, like eating out in the theater, stuff like that. And you really feel it out before you pull the trigger on a big purchase, which might simultaneously include the sale of your house back where you came from. A lot of people that sold, they're so itching to get into a new house because they were just trained and maybe it worked out really well financially being a homeowner for an extended period of time. It's okay to rent for a year. It's cool. There'll be houses again in a year, and you won't have to unwind this big purchase that you've made when you realize maybe that you aren't exactly where you wanted to be. So,
exactly. And as we wrap up, I'm just going to read one paragraph from the show that summarizes all that succinctly and give a shout out to an advisor who was quoted in the journal. So the paragraph reads this, and this is to help people who are considering relocating. Don't do what the people in this article did. Read the article, seriously. And I'm not picking on the mistakes people made. It's just as planners who believe in our process of the younger you helping the older you, I'm shocked that these people didn't do more research. Anyways, this paragraph, Chris. That's why some experts urge buyers to learn as much as they can about a new location before shelling out and buying a home. Quote, it's okay to take a couple of years to explore the areas. Don't jump in immediately, says Mike Laverty, a financial advisor in Hudson, Wisconsin. He advises his clients to rent in an area. Where did we just hear that, folks? To rent in an area where they think they want to live, even if it's only part-time. That's what I'm doing, folks. Part-time. I'm not moving there yet. He continues with his quote, "You really have to view this as a second home and not a vacation. Factor in amenities like shopping and healthcare and other things you wouldn't think about if you were just vacationing there for a couple of weeks." People, and we see this a lot, people go on vacation somewhere. Our clients do this still. They go on vacation a few times. They go visit a friend who might live in a certain location. They come back and they say, "We want to move there. It was good. Oh, we had so much fun. It was great." They envision their entire life through retirement being this wonderful 2-week vacation they just did. And they're going to go move there. Don't fall victim to that if you're thinking of relocating. If you can't do what I'm doing and take 8 years to do it, take as much time as you can and rent.
Yep.
Okay.
Perfect. Well, we want to thank everybody for sticking with us for another EDU show. We've got another Q&A show coming up this week before we have our little week break for the Thanksgiving holiday. So we really appreciate everybody listening. And Jim, I'll see you in a bit for the Q&A show.
Joy Mexico, I hope you can get COVID and stay later like you're planning. let me know how that goes. It's not quite the way I would do it.
That might not be a perfect interpretation of my goal, but I'll let you know how it goes, okay?
All right.
Thanks. Bye.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.